part two of our season one recap.
This is HBO Girls Rewatch. I'm Amelia.
And I'm Evan.
And
we're going to do it. We're talking about the same recap.
We were going to do a recap all in one, but turns out we had so much to say.
Too much, almost.
We had a lot to say about Shoshana, and so we went ahead and split this into two parts, but we are filming on the same day. That's why I'm wearing, that's why we're wearing the same outfit. We're not outfit repeaters. Okay. So last episode, we talked about what girls we were. We talked about Shoshana, and we talked about Jess's arc. So Evan went to blow their nose because they don't want to be sniffly the whole time. It is allergy season here in Brooklyn, New York. But we're excited to dive in, do a deep dive on season one, Marnie and Hannah. I think there's a lot there. Evan shaking.
I'm going to wake up.
I haven't even finished my coffee, but between the recording of the first part of this episode and the second part, I did make a Caesar kale salad.
Honey, you killed Caesar and kale?
That's so funny, guys. We're also gonna give you a sneak peek of our newest segment.
You killed Caesar?
Our new segment in season two.
You killed Caesar?
Do a wig reveal of it.
Okay, wait. Okay, I came up with this idea where it's... I'm always thinking about the word Glock because it's just so fun to say. Not fun to do, but fun to say. So the segment title will be, Girl, get your Glock. It's rapid fire time.
Oh, God. It's just a dopamine rush every time you say it. Girl, get your Glock.
It's a glull. It's that sound. It's so fun.
Girl, get your Glock. It's rapid fire time. And the idea that a girl gets a Glock.
No, actually, we're bringing feminism into guns.
But also, like, we just want to say right here, right now, we need more gun control.
Oh, absolutely.
We're anti-gun.
We love the words that guns make.
We love the sound of the word Glock. Yeah, we love the sound. But that's more of a linguistic thing than...
A Glock could be anything. In this setting, it is a gun, but...
it kind of seems like Goldilocks' nickname. Glock, come here. If I was in a group chat with Goldilocks, I'd totally put her in as Glock. Love that girl.
No, it should be right in the right place. It should be just right.
You know, I just found out, I don't know where I learned this, but it's like the reason the mom's porridge is cold.
Oh, she died from a Glock?
No. Is because she spent so much time preparing her husband and kids' meal that by the time she sat down to eat, the porridge was cold.
Wait, Goldilocks is a mother?
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was a little girl.
No, Goldilocks has a mom.
Yes.
And it's like Mama Bear's porridge was bad. Baby Bear's was just right. Papa Bear's was too hot.
Yes.
So the reason Mama Bear's porridge was so cold is because...
Oh, you're talking about Mama Bear.
Yeah.
I think you're talking about Goldilocks is...
No, I'm talking about the plight of mothers.
Okay, but I didn't... I mean, I'm sure Goldilocks' mom is having a hard time, too.
Well, where is she? She's not looking after her kids. No, exactly.
That's why she's having a hard time. She didn't have the time to take care of Goldie.
You're right. I'm still just like, so is Papa Bear just like sitting down like, oh, I work in the field, so I better eat first.
Wait, I actually think it's really fucked up that Goldilocks' name is Goldilocks. It's like...
She has golden locks.
I know, but it's like to be named after a defining feature in yourself.
It's a children's book. What are they going to do?
I'm just like... Would someone want to be named Mole? Would someone want to be named Weird Nose? It's
like, you know, I know you see me as Snow White, and it's like I always thought of myself as Belle. So in the last like month or two, I've really been having to come to terms with the ideas that I'm actually perceived more as a Snow White than a Belle. You really affect me with your words, Evan.
No, what? Disney? I know we're always talking about those girls on HBO, but what about the girls at Disney?
I know.
Being defined as them is actually a really difficult challenge.
I'm not Belle. I don't like to read. So let's dive into Marnie or Hannah first. What do we want to do?
I think we have to end with Hannah, TBH.
Okay, then let's dive into girl three, Marnie Michaels.
I think you should start because you always are you're reflecting so much as a Marnie in life. I really think you have the power here.
I know. When we did Girl, What Girl Are You in the first part of this episode, I basically kind of did the recap of Marnie, but I'll do it again in more thorough detail and without making myself the center of it.
Good luck.
So we're introduced to Marnie Michaels in the first episode as being Hannah's best friend. And the pilot really establishes that the relationship between The relationship between Hannah and Marnie is like the crux of the show. And it's like they are best friends. And this show is about female friendship. And it's not about boys, even though they both have boys things going on. And that's like a whole thing that is highlighted in the pilot. And then we see that play out and we see the ebbs and flows of this relationship and them living together and growing together and the tensions that arise and the eventual falling out. So we see them start out as best friends and then we see tension begin when Marnie loses the guy in her life and Hannah gains the guy in her life. And then we see continued tensions with like Marnie being by the book and Hannah really having to grapple with the fact that writers aren't by the book. Get it? Because writers write books, but a creative career isn't by the
book. No, you literally have to make yourself laugh.
And then the eventual continued building tension between those two as they deal with such intense things in their early 20s that are really affecting their emotional state outside of the friendship and how that actually feeds on each other's annoyance.
Neuroses.
And then, yeah, neuroses. Amazing term.
Thank you.
And then we see the final big fight in episode 9 where Marnie is like, I'm moving out. And then we really see Marnie follow through and we see that separation. And it really is kind of insane. Like, how close they are in the beginning. It's like they're in bed together. They're like in the bathtub together. Like, they're so intrinsically entwined, and then at the end they don't even live together. Like, it very much is like they are separated. And I know, like, from watching reviews of Lena reviewing the season, she's hoping for season 2 to really highlight the fact that they need to separate themselves, and they've known each other for so long and they've lived in the city together for so long and they went to school together. So part of the character growth of them discovering who they are and becoming who they're meant to be is only going to happen if they are separated and Elisha joins the picture.
Well, I think it's also very interesting because this now, what is happening in the season, right when Marnie moves out right at the end of the season and moves on with Shoshana and Jessa, this is the last time that Marnie lives in Brooklyn. And the thing is, Marnie isn't a Brooklyn character.
If there's one thing about Marnie, she does not belong in Greenpoint.
She doesn't belong in... Well, it was even 10 years ago, Greenpoint, before, like, the Williamification.
Well, I will say she could be a mom in Greenpoint.
Williamburg. She could 100% be a mom, but, like, in her current situation as a young 20-year-old being in Brooklyn, that's not her story.
No, she should be, like, near Kips Bay.
Yeah, she's, like, she's kind of, like... I don't want to say Murray Hill, because I actually think she's a bit more complicated than that. But what I would say is that she could find herself in Tribeca pretty easily, or like a West Village situation.
Yeah, I'm thinking West Village.
I'm thinking West Village, especially today's West Village. Marnie would fit in so well there.
She'd kill it.
She was really never meant to be. Well, Greenpoint does have people that could be in West Village, but Greenpoint 10 years ago, I really don't think it did as much. Like, she was, it was kind of more Brooklyn.
Mm, yeah.
The classic Brooklyn sense of Brooklyn.
Yeah, well.
And that means Bushwick.
You think Greenpoint 10 years ago is Bushwick today?
No. It's still so, like, it was Poland. It's very Polish in Greenpoint, and it's only becoming less so. But 10 years ago, it was very, like, people moving to New York, and I'm very, very Polish. I mean, yes, I think you have some of that overlap. But 10 years ago, I don't think people really existed like they do in Bushwick.
That's interesting.
You don't have Gen Z. Gen Z didn't exist.
Gen Z really did something different. It was kind of millennials.
I guess the Gen Z are millennials.
I just got so tired thinking about millennials.
I'm exhausted
right
now.
It's so hard to think about them so
I'm
often.
I'm so tired of thinking about millennials all day. And I'm forced to.
We brought it upon.
We brought it upon.
Nobody asked us to
do
about
this. Millennials. Do you know how fucked up that is?
Marnie is so cool in this season because we see her in the first episode as what is seen as the perfect, most put-together girl who has it all figured out. And by the end of the season, we see her completely lose her fucking mind and learn to sit in that and try and be okay with it. And that's why she doesn't fuck Charlie at the wedding. And that's why when Jessa gets married, instead of freaking out and being like, Jessa, what the fuck? She's like, woo, yeah, I'm going to get drunk and eat some cake. It's all cool that I don't know what I'm doing with my life and that maybe that's good for me. Even when she moves out and Hannah's like, you don't have a plan. And she's like, I think that's maybe good for me. It's like, this season is all about Marnie learning to let go of the rigidness of how she thinks she should be or thinks she should want. And she thinks she should want her life to be.
No, exactly.
And opening herself up to the idea of more, which really sets her up for her music career to come.
Well, she's built so much of her, like, she built so much of her own perceived value about around being organized. And she perceives her value around being her friend specifically, about being, like, the organized one and the structured one. And, like, that's the role she plays because her friends are clearly not that case. And I think that's why she really feeds into it. But now that she can realize that she can let go of the reins a little bit and that her friends don't really necessarily appreciate her organization, she's letting go a little bit. And she's just going to be more free and, like, in tune with what her desires are.
And, like, I don't think she's ever asked herself the question, like, what do I want?
No, exactly.
It's like, what should I want? That's what I want. And I think she's really battling.
Well, I think she asks other people what they want from her.
Yeah, like the art PR job or whatever, and then the boyfriend.
Well, art PR is such, like, it's not even art PR, it's art gallery. Mm-hmm. It's like working on an art gallery is like one of those jobs that only hot people can have, where she kind of just like sits there, looks pretty, like, and it's also can feel very important because you're also working with like such wealthy, influential people, essentially trying to deal them art. And, like, there's a lot of events. As an event-based culture, I think that also feeds into, like, her own perceived thing. It's, like, she's adjacent to art, and now she wants to be an artist, we find out.
Yeah.
And, like, going from being manager, essentially, to creative. Mm-hmm. And how all their stories kind of interestingly feed into that.
Yeah, that's so true. And, like, the thing about mapping out these four girls and their arcs, it's like Hannah and Marnie are kind of coming from opposite ends, where Hannah is like this creative ball that's looking to get into the business, whereas Marnie is the least creative ball, but she's in the business. So it's kind of these two balls of energy on the opposite side of the spectrum interacting. And so that serves like so many of the plot lines is like those two energies, like grappling with whatever.
It's rock and star trying to be star
and
star.
And both of them trying to meet in the middle.
No, exactly.
It's really cool. And I also feel like a lot of girls who move to New York do come with a plan and a vision of what they're going to do.
Yeah, very true.
And then when they move here, they face the fact that their dream and what they envision for living here is different than what they actually end up wanting.
Yeah.
And they have to kind of change their dream.
Well, especially those girls in the West Village we're talking about, where it's like that's idyllic life. Like, it's what portrayed through influencers on TikTok is like living in the West Village and having this almost, it's like comfy, but all the amenities are there. And it's like, so it's like theoretically cleaner than most neighborhoods or like the east side of Manhattan. And it's so like, I think it's for well to put together people is the West Village. And that's why it's so attracting to people, because it's like, it has that New York grittiness to it, but also it has this, like, it's for very, like, it feels very type A in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
In a way that probably it didn't when the show came out, but does today.
And as we know, Marnie is inspired by, like, kind of, she represents the girl boss millennial.
Yeah.
The working girl, like.
Yes, 100%.
The I'm going to fulfill all the roles of femininity while having, like, my career and being, like, kind of a career woman. And we see that fall apart.
Yeah, we see that. I think the idea of it fall apart. We haven't necessarily seen it fall apart. But it theoretically
We have seen the death of her first relationship, which is one of the main parts of her character arc in season one.
Yes.
Is the letting go of the idea that her college boyfriend is always going to be her boyfriend and opening herself up to finding something new and exciting.
Well, we can't talk about Marnie without talking about Charlie, especially this season.
And I know we talked a lot about Charlie and Marnie's relationship during the episode where they broke up. And a lot of that was us talking about how Charlie kind of like picked Marnie and Marnie kind of picked Charlie, but they were both so focused on the idea of the relationship rather than the idea of each other. The
college flashback scene really says it all.
The college flashback scene. It's like these people do love each other, but they are not in love. They don't have the energy and fire of like a young romantic affair. Yeah. Like it's like they are a married couple.
Yeah, it feels so married couple. Like they're there to like.
It's so soulless and sexless.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially on Marnie's behalf, I think Charlie. I mean, this classic thing. He's like, I decided on you. And it's like he's made this decision in his head where Marnie, again, this plays into her, maybe her own spirit where she kind of had decided on Charlie in the beginning of the season and then realizes it like isn't the fit for her and like starts to recoil so much where it's like his touch feels like a weird uncle.
But it's like half the season she's like dead set on making it work and convincing herself to stay in it. So it's like we really see her struggling with her realizing that she's not in love with this person anymore. And she has to kind of like cut it off. And even though that's scary.
Cut it out motion. Cut it out.
Not to bring up Full House once again.
I did not know that's from there.
With Joey Gladstone.
No, stop. Please.
Cut
You're, it All you out. Do is like bring up Glee and Full House. It's like if you want to talk about those shows, you can. And Survivor. You're so good at that.
I'm so fucking good.
And also I brought up that Jesse reference in a different episode.
I know.
So crazy for us to bring it up twice.
God.
That's hell. If you look at Sex and the City, not to bring up a different show, but these are good shows to compare, where, what's her
name? Charlotte.
Charlotte. Charlotte and Marnie are like probably the two closest overlapping characters between both the shows, I would say. They're both like pretty brunette women who like...
They're planners.
Yeah, they're planners. Like
they have an image in their mind of what they want their life to look like.
Yeah, just like at different age levels. And they actually both work in an art gallery.
Never thought about that.
I think it's very interesting. They both sort of as the same position in an art gallery.
This is fun. Let's map what girl is what Sex and the City girl.
I mean, so Jessa, Samantha.
Yes.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
I guess is Hannah.
Is Hannah. I mean, they're both writers.
So by default.
I think that's really interesting that they're both writers. That the blonde girls are both the sluts.
Yeah.
Quote unquote. And then... the thing is, Shoshana is definitely not
Miranda, or is she more Miranda than we think?
Well, she's Miranda. Like I think she watched Miranda. And was like, I'm gonna be Miranda. Like career wise,
you know
like,
who hustle, Shay hustle, Diaz hustle. Is? Andrew Reynolds.
Is there any crossover characters between these two shows? But they really are so similar. I mean, it's very interesting to see that there's. Two job parallels, writer, and gallery. And I think it's very interesting that it definitely, again, it's like no art is original. This is a spinoff of Sex and the City.
And it
in
also
some ways.
Is an HBO
half hour. It's both, they're both, they've
well,
replaced
it. Well, I think
in
we
a lot
made this argument before that Sex and the City is 2000s, Four Girls in a City. HBO Girls is 2010's Four Girls in a City, and we're still waiting on Four Girls in a City for 2020, that decade.
Well, I know. It's a sex life of college girls. College is a new city. It's like, I don't want to emulate those girls. They're all so silly.
The sex life of college girls is nothing like...
You ripped my blanket in half. Get your hands off of my blanket.
Well, don't make a comparison of Sex Life and College Girls to HBO.
Stop! I'm actually gonna. My feet right now are like in little balls. I'm so stressed.
Okay, no. I'm sorry. Back on track.
No, but Sex and the City and HBO Girls, I mean, this case has definitely been made, but there is such an insane overlap between the two shows. And I mean, I think that, again, I guess it is a decade thing. Is it
because no shows have ever been about girls before those two?
But there's a 28-year, there's a 20-year age gap between these women.
No, so the difference is that Sex and the City, all of them are in their 30s. All of them know exactly what they want. And this is...
They already have developed careers.
Yeah, and all of them know exactly... They're looking for a husband. They're looking for the promotion. Like, they know exactly what they want. Whereas, like, girls, none of them know what they want. They're all 20-somethings who are lost. And it's kind of about being lost rather than, like, about searching for something. It's about searching for yourself.
Yeah, that's essentially being 20. It's like, we... Yeah. The reason why all of us are so unconfident and, like, don't have the tools necessarily to, like, figure out our emotions is because we don't know ourselves.
It's so fun to... I forget who said this. Oh, it was fully Pat Regan. but he's like, whenever I find out someone's 23, I forgive them for everything they've ever done. Because it's like, they have no idea what they're doing. And it's like, that's so true. It's like, it's like, I even think about myself at 21. It's like... Okay, whatever that girl was doing, like, I wish her the best, but it's, like, there was no way to know what to do.
No, exactly. Like, my brother took a job in Illinois. He's moving to, like, almost rural Illinois. He's, like, a little city in the middle of Illinois, and he's taking a job where... He's also 22, pointing out. He's taking a job where it's, like, 10 people work there and, like, designing, like, new gardening gear. Like, electronic gardening gear will be his job because he got an engineering degree, and it's, like, the job he was able to get right now, being fresh out of college, but... And I understand it's like, I think 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds, 24-year-olds, we're a very headstrong group. Like, a lot of us think we know what we want.
And you're so ambitious and so ready for the world, but don't know what to do. It's like, yeah. My sister's graduating college right now with a degree in opera, and she's like, I actually don't know what I should be doing. And I'm like, you shouldn't.
She doesn't know what she wants to do, but she also has the impulse to be like...
But she's like, I need to be successful.
Well, exactly. And I think she's probably, I would assume she's fairly headstrong about that. And, like, won't really take advice from others. Like, 22-year-olds actually feel like they know the world.
How can a person know everything at 18 but nothing at 22?
Is that a real song?
Yeah.
Who?
Taylor Swift. Nothing New featuring Phoebe Bridgers.
No, and you know what? It's, like, no one was talking about 20-year-olds 20, 30 years ago because that was, like, such a marriage core energy when people were getting married earlier. But now that we don't have the certainty of, like, marriage and, like, you follow a specific career path, there's so much more uncertainty. It's so much harder to find yourself.
Exactly. You can't
emulate and yourself, like, through others.
That is the difference between, like, moving to New York or staying in your hometown. As we see in the hometown episode, it's like everyone's getting married or dying.
Or, like, owns a pharmacy with their dad.
Yeah, you know, like, everybody has it kind of, like, set up. And it's the idea that when you move to New York, you don't have anything set up.
But that's excitement.
We were talking to... I forgot what conversation I was having last night at a bar, but everybody was saying that, like, how come every time a white woman writes a show, it's about...
Esther Falk, first guest on this pod.
Well, she didn't say it. Somebody said it to her.
Yeah.
Because she's like, my show, Esther's writing a one-woman show about moving to the city to make your dreams come true. No, it was Gara.
Gara. Okay.
He was saying that... every time a white woman writes a show, it's about moving to the big city to follow your dreams. Why is there not another plot line? And we do have to wonder.
No, there's only one plot
line for women. But we basically decided there's only one thing. Like, you're either staying in your hometown and getting married, or you're moving to the city to follow your dreams. So it's like, of course, that's what every show is about.
No, every show is about
Mindy Kaling's a doctor. Dreams. Was that her dream?
It's funny because... It's funny because everyone on TV is following a dream while every character on TV is following a dream while every character that is playing those characters has achieved their dream. So it's always this, like, weird disconnect.
I know. Well, I'm always thinking about that in terms of Broad City because they're writing a show about being so bad at working towards your goals, and they had to be so good at working towards their goals to get the show. So it's like they're constantly having to write from the point of view of them being, like, 6 years ago.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Yeah, I don't know how they kept it up.
It's hard to come up with original stuff for that. Because Lena Dunham, a lot of the inspiration, like the crack accident came from her friend who accidentally like smoked crack at a party. Mm-hmm. And then her, like when she got angry at Adam.
For sending the nude, that's because somebody sent her a weird nude.
And she like, it was a breakup text that she had sent to someone. And she basically used so much of the vernacular wording from this email that she wrote to someone when they broke up. Being like, I just want someone to only care about me and want to only have sex with me, but like not necessarily date me. Uh-huh. It's like, and it's so funny. And like she used that inspiration from her own life. And I think if you kind of look at the further seasons as this goes, like you definitely see development into characters, but you don't necessarily see these like as organic moments.
Yeah. I think,
and that's why people really resonate with the first two seasons of this show, because it's so real. Where it's so it real. Still is real later on, but it's not as real as the first two seasons.
Yeah, which I think going back to Marnie, we really see Marnie in the first few seasons seems so much more real than she kind of does when she goes music mode. She kind of becomes a caricature. Yeah. Whereas like she seems, everything that's happened to her so far feels very grounded.
Mm, I agree with that. It's very interesting. It's so interesting to watch. But she also has to have this moment of like becoming so grounded to ungrounded in the first season. And also, if we didn't really talk, but this is such a nice way to, like, everything's so, like, wrapped up. Like, there is enough progress for all these characters, at least three of them, to, like, tell a nice story.
So, on that profound moment, honey, we made it. Guess what?
Are we done with Marn?
We're done with Marnie. And we're on to the belle of the ball. I'm holding your finger, so.
Hannah Reykjavik.
Hannah Horvath. That's right, everybody. Now that you've heard the first and last name of each of the girls, you know that they plan to make the first name and the last name both start with the same letter for all the characters. So, what do we
except
got?
For Lena.
Hannah Horvath.
Oh, last name.
Marnie Michaels. Jessa Johansson. And Shoshana Shapiro.
I love alliterations.
Me too. Do you remember when you found out about figurative language in English class? Because I did. And then I was like, oh my God, all this time I spent hating animated shows because I was like, they have nothing to do with me. Meanwhile, the whole time they were symbolism and metaphors for real humans. I lost my damn mind when I learned that in middle school.
Your Powerpuff Girls is essentially the same story as HBO Girls.
Oh, I never watched that because even though it was a show about girls, it felt like it was for boys.
No, it was four girls.
Why? Girls shouldn't be superheroes. They should be having fun.
They were having the most fun.
Were they?
Yeah, because they always won, basically.
It seems like they were always having to fight off evil. Girls don't really fight like that.
I think for someone whose whole thesis is to help girls, this is a terrible outlook.
Okay, I'll give Powerpuff another chance.
Not at this point.
You want to map out for the listeners what Hannah's arc was this season so then we can reflect?
Yeah. Okay, so Hannah, is there growth here? There's some.
There's growth. Come on. The pilot to her eating cake on the beach. I mean, it's a 180.
I think it's really funny that she starts off the show eating and ends the show eating.
Yeah, I think it was by design.
It was by design, but it's so funny.
As we know, Hannah loves pleasure, and food's a part of that.
Yeah, she's having fun, and what does she do with that fun? She learns from that fun.
Yeah, it really is like... Hannah's mom tells her what she's all about, and it's true. She's not lying. Yeah,
this whole show is just like her taking advice, and then maybe at the end.
Hannah's dad's still straight in this season. Very cool.
Well, that's not how that works.
You're right. I take it back.
Actively bearding. He hasn't shaved yet.
He hasn't shaved.
He's yet. In a damn closet.
Hannah gets cut off from her parents. She's working an unpaid
Hannah
internship.
Hannah gets paid from her parents. She graduated Oberlin. Theoretically came to New York City for a year, is like working unpaid internship at a...
2 years.
2 years?
Her parents have been supporting her for 2 years.
Okay, her parents were supporting for 2 years. They're like, we can't support your groovy lifestyle anymore. And she's like, what groovy lifestyle?
Which I think is a fair question for her to ask because her lifestyle isn't groovy. She's too like normal girl to be groovy.
I think parents are thinking in New York City because it's such an expensive city that it is always groovy here. But people get away with so little and do so much. I guess that's groovy.
Okay, well.
Yeah, so she has this unpaid job. She is financially supported by her parents.
Her boss is Jason Styles from Gilmore Girls.
Her boyfriend, or the person in her situation, barely cares about her.
Doesn't ever respond to her texts.
Doesn't ever respond to her texts. She's living with a girl who, like, there's a lot of tension there.
She's living with her childhood best friend.
Which means tension.
So unlike us, that. Since we didn't know each other as children, there's never any tension between us.
I don't know you well enough. I'm kidding. I know you so well.
You know me more than anyone ever has. Do you know how scary that is for me?
I got to fight. I'm going to... I'm swinging.
I'm being really vulnerable with you right now.
No, that's, you're just, is that stretching. True? I know what? You better than anyone's ever known you.
Yeah, you and Charlie.
And how much of that is your fault?
All of it. And how much of it is true? Sorry, I was closed off for a lot of years. I was dealing with stuff. I was learning. I was growing. Now I'm more open to love and life.
This is love and life. I feels like a levity right now in this room. Okay, let me talk about this crazy girl. So what are we watching this girl progress into? So she goes from little psycho diva to...
That's right, psycho diva. Pilot is all about establishing Hannah as psycho and diva.
Psycho diva. And then by the end of the season, she's girl with a cause.
Oh, what's her cause?
Eating cake by the ocean, having and learning from that cake from the ocean.
I hope Pharrell is sending Lena residuals.
Oh, because Lena came up with that damn theory, and then it's not Pharrell.
I don't think anybody ate cake by the ocean before this.
It's
not
Pharrell. It's Joe Jonas's band.
Joe Jonas has a band that's not the brothers?
No, I know. It's like DN. It's Donatelle in New York, DKNY.
I was just on their website this morning. I want to buy clogs. Like orange ones.
You have clogs. Oh, yeah, but you should get orange.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get like orange. Like,
and you bought Melissa's today.
Polly Pocket. So I bought two pairs of Polly Pocket shoes. I need one more.
You bought two pair of Melissa's?
Yeah.
Whoa. For
when was on sale?
For readers at home, that is...
those jelly shoes. But I got these platform ones that literally look like plastic Polly Pocket shoes. I hope they're okay to walk in because I'm going to be...
Yeah, I think they are.
I'm going to be...
Do sweaty feet.
Dancing around town. No. I don't really sweat because when I was a lifeguard, I trained my body not to sweat.
Oh, I mean, I was in a lifeguard, but I've done the same thing. Or I've, like, never exert myself. I can't tell.
Perfect. The first time I've ever allowed myself to sweat is in hot yoga this year.
You, like, was it, like, a question error popped up in your brain? You're like, yeah, I guess this time. You know, it's like, can we ask for your location? And you were like, no. This time, when I asked if you can sweat, you said, yeah.
I said, accept all cookies.
Yeah, you said, accept all cookies.
not us making digital jokes. So let's dive into the Hannah's arc. So she gets cut off from her parents and has to get a job so she can pay her rent that she now pays herself.
Oh, yeah.
And the way she does that is by trying to make her internship a paid job, not getting that, so basically getting fired, getting a new job where she's groped and harassed and then kind of fucks that up and ends up quitting because she doesn't want to be working under a guy like that. She won't
be like anybody else. La, 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 la,
and then she gets a job as a barista, and she's very bad at it, but she has an in because it's Ray, who's the boss. And he actually really has a soft side for that crazy, wacky girl. And then...
He's somehow the most lenient character, but says the least lenient things.
I know. Wait, what's on my chin?
On your chinny chin chin? A freckle?
You're right. Okay. And so that's basically Hannah's career. She's trying to write, but she's not really writing. She has some essays. She has a diary, as we know. And then she kind of is trying to step more into the writing side of things by going to the writing mic that her old professor invited her to. And we kind of end off with her, you know, getting the survival job. So now she has more time to focus on actually writing. And then in her love life, we see her go from having a situationship, which that term didn't even exist when the show was around, which is kind of cool. But Adam was definitely like a situationship. And then we see her be brave enough to ask for it to be boyfriend, girlfriend.
Exactly.
And we see Adam say yes and.
To the dress.
Yes to the dress. Yes, and so then we see funny. Her.
No, but.
Getting a loving relationship and then realizing, like, oh my God, this is scary. And I'm scared. And how intimate do I want to be with this person? Because as we know, her and Adam actually don't even know that much about each other. So that's Hannah's career and love life. And then her friendship life is really seeing twists and turns. But we really do see how good a friend Hannah is, even though she doesn't believe in it. She is always there for Jessa.
Does that believe in what? Friendship?
Well, in this finale, when Adam's like, you think you're not pretty, you think you're a bad writer, you think you're a bad friend, but in fact, you are pretty, you are a good writer, and you are a good friend.
Well, and Elsa Marnie's like, maybe, and you're a bad friend, she says, maybe my priorities right now aren't to be a good friend.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, she is doing that.
She is being a bad friend, but she's also still being an okay friend.
She's like that person you keep around because you have, like, history, and, like, there are so many benefits. There are, like, benefits to the friendship. But also, there, you got to know what the cons are, and you have to learn how to adjust for those. But the thing is, the cons are always changing with Hannah.
Totally. Couldn't agree more. But by the end of the season, we see her. I mean, when she loses her purse, I think pilot episode Hannah would freak out and be like, oh my God, how do I get back home? But we really see her grow into a more confident and brave and courageous character of a person. By her being like, I did lose my purse. I'm going to go walk on Coney Island and really just sit with myself for a second. And her admitting in the season finale that she's really scared to Adam. She's like, I am really scared. It's like her for the first time being self-aware of why her behaviors are leading her to take the actions they are. Because I think early on, she doesn't know why she's making choices or what that means for like the outcome. Whereas, like, by the end, she's kind of seeing the consequences of her own fears around intimacy.
With the comfort of age, like, there's growth. Like, we are seeing why aging is such an important process because there comes with so much growth with that. And all the characters being, like, all the older characters in the show are, like, God, thank God I'm not 24 years old. And then being, like, actually, it's really okay. It's really fun. And then we actually, it's not that fun. It's really fun and also not that fun. And that's a really big part of being 24, it's a damn roller coaster. That's an analogy for it. And I think it's funny she ends up at Coney Island because she's on the roller coaster and she's trying to get off of it. She's feeling ups and she's feeling down. We're seeing a damn cyclone in the background, and that's her damn experience throughout this season.
Yeah, we really see her realize that for her to create the life she wants, she's really going to have to just constantly face new fears and put herself in new situations and be okay with the unknown.
Well, especially if she wants to be a writer. Like, she's going to have to, like, she does like putting herself in weird situations, but not necessarily having the solution or the tools to handle the situations. Like, she just puts herself into that. And now we kind of see that she is gaining more tools to handle situations.
Yeah, and we're seeing that, like, at the end, she was so being taken care of and coddled. And now that she's set free and really having to find her own way, she's realizing she actually is capable of doing that. And I think by the end of season one, we see her realize that she can take care of herself and she can work towards her goals. And even though it's scary and hard, she's going to do it.
Oh, she has to do it.
She's got
it. And I think she's also feeling the reward of working towards her goals. Like, she is understanding the benefit of not just, like, having a goal and saying you have a goal, but not actually putting yourself out there in the actual goal. Just, like, theoretically, she could be a successful writer, but she hasn't tried at all, really. And yeah, she hasn't really tried to be a writer for this show, but she's trying to be an adult. And the success that comes with that. Like, so many people, I'm definitely in this way. It's like, before you ever try something, you have this perception in your mind with that you're going to be very talented at that thing, whatever it is, just because you're like, oh, I see their mistakes. I would know how I would do it differently. Before you even try anything, I think, like, this happens in stand-up a lot. Like, you definitely feel like you're perceived so much better, and then you start doing it, you're like, oh my God, I'm terrible at this. And it actually takes a little bit of time to get comfortable with it all over again. And everything's like that. Like, it's so, I think comedy is a good example because you can hear people talk about it. But it's with everything. It's sports. It's just, like, being new at anything. Like, you have such an impression of yourself that you're going to kill it, but without ever trying it and actually gaining skills and that experience, you're never actually going to be talented at it. You only will have the perception of it. And that can be enough for some people, the perception that they would be good at something even if they never try it.
And that's what we see so much about, like, people who stay in their hometown. They're like, oh, I would have made the NFL.
Yeah. Or it's like I would have made.
It's better to hold on to the dream of like who they could be if they had made some other choices and believing that they really could have been that versus being the person that's like, I'm really going to be that and I'm going to take the necessary steps and how hard that actually does end up being.
Well, that's why I love seeing Heather, even if she's a terrible dancer, go to LA and at least try to be a dancer because otherwise what? She's going to work at a coffee shop and be filled with regret for her whole life and she just witnessed her really good friend die.
It's better to try and fail than never try at all, I think is the essence of this show.
I don't think life, in my own perception, not to make it about me, but life isn't necessarily about the expression where like life is about the journey, not about the destination. It's so true.
It's the friends you make along the way.
It's the friends you make along. Like that's just like so nice to. It's like okay, if I don't end up being successful at my chosen craft, doesn't make me a bad person or bad at what I did. It just means it didn't work out that way. But I'm so glad I tried at it. And like in some ways, you always will succeed success in it. It just looks different for everyone.
Absolutely.
It's so beautiful. I mean, that's kind of the Hannah character where she's chasing a dream. Definitely a dream that's even harder and harder to get for her. She gets older and puts herself out there more in a craft that, like, doesn't necessarily have the legs. She wants to be, like, a Hemingway, but that Hemingway doesn't really exist anymore. So she's set up for, like, journal writer or, like, columnist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see how that dream keeps changing. And turns into something new throughout this whole show and specifically throughout the season too. Like she works from a publishing house and then she ends up in a coffee shop, which sounds crazy, but actually it's like kind of a very natural progression of having dreams. Like starting in this like coffee shops are essentially very creative environments, especially like in the cities where people come and work. And I'll just sit there and I like watch people design websites for 3 hours. I'm like doing like sending out emails. And like there's a lot of creative bubble energy and it's cool that she's in a space like that and working there. And I think she just enjoys that aspect of being around creatives and cafe grumpy. And it's a cool story. It's like, that's her mail room.
What do you mean that's her mail room?
Like there's so many people that start off like being producers or like,
oh, you mean like the mail room of mail room. UTA?
Yeah.
Somebody was talking about how they worked in the mail room and it's literally like all you do is wait for mail to be printed and then deliver it to the person who printed it.
Yeah, but I know people have built, they're writers right now.
Yeah, I know.
Because they've started in mail rooms.
It's totally a trajectory.
It's a real thing.
I applied for that job. I did not get it.
I'm sure it's so competitive.
I had to work at like a startup instead. It's no problem.
Okay, did we say anything about Hannah?
We've said so much about Hannah. We've said so much about Marnie. I think it is actually time for us to wrap it up. We do want to say on the note of Grumpy's Cafe, we reached out to the owner and we are looking at...
Well, we haven't heard anything yet, so let's not say anything.
Never mind.
I hope to hear back.
We've got some live stuff in the brainstorming stage. We'd love to take it to the ground. To the real life.
The trading floor.
For those of you who do live in New York, we'd love to meet you. We've really been so excited.
Yeah, let's take a second to reflect on our season throughout this show.
Yeah, so we decided to start the podcast at the beginning of this year. We didn't even know it was going to be.
We had so many different ideas. One of Amelia's ideas was called Shroomates, where we would take shrooms and talk every episode. Yeah. Neither of us really care for shrooms that much. We both have like microdosed it for like a whole week and we're like, okay, awesome. Now let's do it all the way. And it's like, could you imagine we had a trip every single week?
I don't remember having that idea. That was your first idea.
It came to you in a dream you said.
That's awesome.
We were kind of coming with ideas. We had so many random, we have a list somewhere. There's so many random ideas we came up with.
Yeah. But you know, girls has always been a big show for me because I love shows about girls.
It's getting so popular. Every single person we were talking to organically was really coming back into the zeitgeist, bringing up the show Girls.
And we thought it'd be a good anchor for us.
For something we love.
To be able to talk about something we love.
I've only started loving the show even more after starting a podcast. I'm very thankful for the audience that we've built throughout the show.
I feel like we've gotten such a response.
Such a nice, insanely kind community we've built. I love receiving everyone's DMs and messages.
Yeah. Everybody interacting online.
So kind.
I'm so glad.
I never felt better in my life, I swear to God.
I'm so glad we could have the conversations because it is interesting to look back on this show and take stock of it now that there's been some time away from it being, you know, live on the air.
important. I mean, I don't think we necessarily, there's so many subjects to cover with this show because, again, it's, I feel like our situations right now are very similar to the ones playing out in Girls. And it's also taking the cultural lens as something that really depicts, I think, what a typical zeitgeist life looked like 10, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. And like putting in today's lens. And that's a really interesting thing because so much reflection is over like 20, 30, 40, 50 years, but nothing so like in the decade almost.
And we really have noticed, I mean, I think we've brought it up almost every single episode, the difference of like how different plot lines would work post Me Too movement versus pre Me Too movement, which was like one of the few movements that have happened.
We're in a TikTok generation.
We're like, in a TikTok generation
that's so fast.
Everything moves so fast. I think the conversation in terms of like race and diversity and inclusion is so far.
Gender, sex.
Yeah, gender.
We haven't even touched that in this show
we
yet.
We haven't even talked about the fact that like all these girls are 100% straight.
Yeah, and the thing is today they wouldn't be.
Yeah, that would never happen.
Every girl in Brooklyn is bisexual.
Yeah.
Is that bad to say?
Or they, them.
Well, then they wouldn't be a girl.
Yeah, I don't even think they'd call the show Girls now.
Them.
But it's definitely cool to see how much, you know, like the culture has shifted in such a short time in terms of what we deem as acceptable and unacceptable. And I know Lena Dunham has famously faced a lot of backlash.
Yeah.
On the show. And I will say, you know, the TikTok conversation often is like, Lena's problematic for X, Y, and Z. And then there's a lot of people being like, well, Lena created a show that actually broke so many things that were still such like a thing. Like even the fact that like Lena Dunham was the first like non-size zero girl to ever have a TV show, basically. Or to see like a girl have like sex drive.
Yeah, have a sex drive, be sex forward even.
Or, yeah.
And like also not be conventionally beautiful.
Yeah, like it really did, you know, stir conversation and break the mold of what it is, what society's idea of womanhood was in a lot of ways. But it's cool that we can look back just 10 years later and be like, oh my God, we're so much farther. And that doesn't even seem so groundbreaking or profound anymore. Like people who are watching like Gen Z, like half of them watching it now, they're like, what is this? It's like, duh, because the culture has moved so quick.
There's so many first-time watchers to this show.
There's so many first-time watchers who are like, this doesn't seem that progressive, but 4-10 years ago, it was so progressive, and it's so cool to see that society has progressed even more.
Well, I also think it's a very nice size show. Like, it's not too long. It's a show you can often revisit because it talks about so many different issues, and it's such a specific time in someone's life that it's easy for that person to watch that show and reflect on it. Like we were watching a show previously younger to us and now mm-hmm. we're living the same age of this. So this was a staple of like what being 20 looked like. And now that we're actually going through this age, it's like
we're realizing that a lot of the plot lines, the between the lines of the show are so specific and accurate to the experiences we have. When I think when we both first watched the show, we didn't pick up on the fact that like that would actually happen.
No, it's insane. It's like the words, like I can use an antidote from Girls in every single conversation I have. And I do.
But thank you guys so much for listening. We're so excited for a new season, all new guests, some new segments.
Really exciting guests coming up. Yeah, this has been so wonderful.
It's been so wonderful. I hope you like these two more serious analytical episodes.
We'll be back. We'll be silly next time.
Yeah, we try and do a balance of like deep dive analysis and then also just like having fun and, you know, being girly.
Please rate and review.
If you haven't yet, please, please, please take the time to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Even just writing like a few words.
Or literally just say something so silly. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to grovel. I don't want to end this way. So I'll end it with a fun fact. I have one connected earlobe and one non-connected earlobe. Woo! Can't wait to see you.
We'll be back next week with season 2. So make sure to watch season 2, episode 1, so you stay up to date. Love y'all so much. Have an amazing rest of your day. Bye.
Bye.